This episode of Earl Grey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org.
Hey, this is Spencer Garrett. I was Simon Tarsis on Star Trek The Next Generation, and you are listening to Trek FM.
Earl Grey hot.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Earl Grey, Trek FM's dedicated podcast to the next generation. I'm back as your judge, jury, and of course the executioner, Richard Marquez. And joining me again on the plaintiff side is the confident, this time, Justin Ozer. How you doing, Justin?
I'm doing great. Yeah, this is our first recording of the year. It's nice to be doing more Earl Grey in 2018.
Yay, 2018! We're all still here. And on the defendant side is, as always, the lovely Amy Nelson. How you doing, Amy?
I'm doing great. And when this drops, we will have seen a new episode of Discovery starting the last 6 episodes. So very excited for that to get going again.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. And we'll hear you on Postcards from the Edge again, right?
That's right. In a couple days on Thursday.
Exciting news. All right. Well, it looks like we might have an iTunes contest winner. Justin, who won?
Yeah, so as listeners might remember, we were having an iTunes contest through the end of December, and the prize was The Art of Juan Ortiz for the Next Generation, and we do have a winner out of the reviews that we got. So the winner is user Foz Rotten. So Foz is F-O-Z. So please contact us so we can send you that book. Congratulations, and thanks for everyone that participated by giving us an iTunes star rating and written review.
Yay, that was so fun to read comments that we got. So thank you for participating, listeners.
All right. Well, so looks like we have a little bit of feedback from the Babel Conference. So I guess let's just start with Earl Grey 207. For those of you that might have missed it, that would be the Melinda Snodgrass interview. And I must say, that was a fun interview. And would you guys agree?
Absolutely. It was so nice to have her on and to get her perspective on writing. It was great.
It was amazing. I love that we were able to get a Next Generation writer who wrote The Measure of a Man, which is an amazing episode. And hopefully we'll have some more interviews lined up for you in the future.
Absolutely. Well, let's make that as a goal.
Yes.
Let's make that our New Year's resolution.
Excellent. Yes.
There you go. I don't believe in New Year's resolutions, but I will on this time, for this one time.
So some of the feedback, Brandon Shea Mutella said, "Great interview, guys. You should be very proud. What a wonderful guest to get on your show." Agreed. She is wonderful.
And Tim Robertson said, "That was a great interview. Really enjoyed the conversation and insights." Thanks, Tim. Appreciate you and all of the other listeners who listened to the interview.
And Christopher Baca, great interview. It seems Trek is a very stressful show to be a part of. I wouldn't doubt it. with all those interviews that are on all those DVDs, specials and everything, I'm sure. Yeah, they've shown their frustration.
Yeah, that's for sure. And combine that with Chaos on the Bridge, definitely, back in the day.
Yeah, if listeners haven't seen Chaos on the Bridge, that's an excellent documentary about the first 2 seasons of The Next Generation when things were kind of crazy. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's kind of a shame that it can. I mean, I think it could be stressful to work on any TV or movies, but we've heard a lot of stories about it being difficult on The Next Generation, and we're just grateful for everyone that, you know, stuck it out to give us the content that we love.
Absolutely, absolutely. So moving along, we're also going to talk about the Babel Conference comments that or feedback that was on the Facebook page for Earl Grey 208, and that would be the first part of this episode, the courtroom dramas part one. And I actually had a lot of fun. And you guys, I'm assuming you guys had a lot of fun talking about the first four seasons of TNG and courtroom dramas.
Yeah, definitely. And I really enjoy how we're sort of clumping them and seeing just all the courtrooms together. It's really given me a new perspective and insight into what Federation and Star Trek has for justice and stuff like that. So it's been really fun. Looking forward to finishing it up today.
Yeah, definitely. And sorry we had to leave you on a cliffhanger because there's 2 weeks between these two episodes. But it's been a lot of fun. I love when we look at things through a certain perspective through the Next Generation, and that's a lot of fun.
All right. So one of the comments on the Babel Conference, Johnson Lay. Okay.
Probably.
Well, he says, an interesting perspective on TNG. Looking forward to part two. Well, you get it right now. However, I have to call you out on one thing. Uh-oh. He says, when Justin was recapping Sins of the Father, he said Doros was Worf's father and nobody corrected him. LOL. Well, of course we know Doros is not Worf's father, but that was our bad, just a slip up there.
Yeah, you know, and I obviously none of us realized it while we were recording. It's one of those things that just kind of went by. And then as I was listening to it and saw the comment, I was like, oh no, I got that wrong. And I felt pretty bad about it, but
It's always good to have listeners keeping us on our toes. So thank you
it
for
is.
Doing
and,
that.
And, you know, we host this show, but we're far from perfect. So, but you know what? I think today when we're doing the recaps, maybe we should just read them from memory alpha to make sure that we don't have any slip ups like that. Because when you're trying to like make up what you remember on the fly, mistakes can happen.
Yeah.
But no, I appreciate listeners are paying attention, keeping us honest.
Yeah.
So listener, Eddie Hagler said, in Justice, the punishment of death for breaking the law is reminiscent of the biblical story of the Garden of Eden, that only one law existed and only one punishment. Yeah, so thank you, Eddie, for that comment. That's an interesting thing I didn't even think about. And there is this religious context with this God in the sky for the Edo, but I didn't really think of it as like a comparison to what you see in the Bible. So that's very interesting.
Yeah, that is.
Well, thank you, listeners, for those comments, and thank you.
Yeah, keep them coming. We appreciate it.
Yes. Yes, very much so. Yes. Okay, so today we will be concluding the two-part series of the determination of sentence for host Amy and also Justin. Oh, rug show. Oh, sorry. Okay, so today we're going to be talking about part two of the courtroom dramas of The Next Generation for seasons 4 through 7. And we'd like to thank, again, Standard Orbit as the inspiration for this episode and listener Rebecca Skipper. I haven't seen any lawyers at my door. Have you guys?
Yes. No. Thankfully, Standard Orbit has not, sued
not
us
yet. But, you know, Ken has that army uniform of yours, Richard, and I don't know if he might be paying you a visit.
And it looks fantastic on him, and he should join the army right now. Okay, now I'll get sued. But thank you for suggesting that we do something similar here on Earl Grey that they did on Standard Orbit for doing TNG courtroom dramas. So thank you guys for suggesting that. Today, what we're going to be discussing, obviously, like we just said before, we're going to be doing the last three seasons of TNG, not four, because there's not eight, obviously.
It is four seasons, though, 4, 5, 6, 7. Although there's none in 6, but
yeah.
The last part.
Yes.
Okay.
The last half.
All right. The last half. Let's just say that. Yeah. So the episodes we're going to be talking about is Devil's Due, and that will be season 4, episode 13. The Drumhead, season 4, episode 21. The First Duty, season 5, episode 19. And then, of course, last but not least, All Good Things, season 7. And episode 25 and 26, or as we all know it as the season series finale. Okay, so let's start off with the first one. Let's start off with Devil's Due, Season 4, Episode 13. Justin?
Yeah, so I'll just give a little summary from Memory Alpha. The Enterprise-D responds to a distress signal from a science station on Ventax 2 where the planet is in chaos over the return of a being who claims to be that culture's devil, with devil in quotation marks.
Devil.
Yeah, the devil.
So, to me, this one is, it feels like it's like a landlord or someone trying to uphold, obviously it is upholding a contract. Basically, that's what this whole thing starts out, that, you know, we get peace or something like that because of this ancient contract that they made back into the past. But like, yeah, definitely, it's a very interesting format to be like, oh, this contract that was done like what it was a thousand years ago.
Yeah, it's a long ago. Time to make good on your contract,
right? Yeah, I mean, maturity and all that kind of stuff, and things change along the down the road. Yeah, that kind of the yeah. But yeah, it's a very, very interesting. I actually love this episode, mainly because of, and I've discussed it with before, Ardra's wardrobe. I really love what she's wearing and all that kind of stuff. I love it.
Oh, I'm sure. Like, I know, yeah. Which outfit you like the best.
I don't know what you're talking about. You can't prove anything. But yeah, aside the costumes. But like, yeah, it's definitely a fun episode because I just love how Data is that judge, and he has to be that unbiased, and he really is being unbiased, or trying to be. What do you guys think?
Yeah, Data's role is really interesting, and actually one of the things I really like about this episode is the humor in it. There's some really funny stuff, like when Data is basically the judge in this contract dispute, things happen like Ardra makes Picard disappear, and he says the advocate will refrain from making her opponent disappear, which is hilarious and not the kind of thing you usually see in courtroom dramas like this. So there's like the fate of a planet that's hanging in the balance, but there's all of this comedy, and it doesn't feel like it's out of place. It is actually funny because, like, in a certain way, what's happening is kind of ridiculous, and Picard sees it as that, like, you can't possibly be, you know, this person that's like their devil that's coming back after a thousand years. There must be some other angle here, and he's trying to figure out what's going on. So I think it's a really nice mix of humor and drama in a legal drama. So I think it works well for that.
Well, yeah, and they originally were just going to go straight to the courts, and then Data finds this contract dispute, you know, that took precedence so that they could have arbitration. And then that's what required Data to step in, you know, when Ardra chooses him, because he's incapable of deceit or bias. And there are those, you know, so it is a pretty serious thing and sort of reminiscent of, you know, if we're talking the Bible, like the Messiah. So coming back, how will we recognize, you know, it's like, well, how do you recognize me? I shook the earth. And, you know, so the Talaxians, Bentaxians. So sorry.
Wrong series.
Yes.
Oh, Neelix is in this one?
The Ventaxians are very confident that this is, you know, who she says she is. And so to try and disprove it sort of is what's hanging in the balance here that Picard has to do.
And then he disproves them with logic, you know, that, you know, going through their history and everything and just basically disproving the whole entire contract altogether. And it's great. But I was just thinking about this. I was like, wouldn't this be the end of magic? Like, the use of magic? Because, like, you can disappear stuff and everything and whatnot. And just like a magician does. So
Bringing science into play.
Yeah, I mean, it makes me think of, I think it was Asimov who said, any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. Like, yeah. To someone who doesn't have that level of technology, it seems magical. And actually, there's a sequel to this in the Prey trilogy of books where basically Ardra is kind of a part of this group of magicians that con people with these things that look like magic tricks. So it's really very, very interesting, and how long it takes Picard to really win the case, because after a while he's like, unless I figure out the source of this, everybody seems cool with what's going on here. So it takes him actually a long time to win.
Yeah. And one thing that I really love the context of the story is, like, when Picard's like, well, did Ardra come in and did she clean up the environment? Well, no, we did that. We went to a Gregarian, you know, society. Well, did she, you know, and was like,
did she even pick up a piece of trash?
Yes. You know, and so just that story of you accomplished this, you know, and that your ancestor that did this. And so don't throw it away and just give it to her, because those are your works and your successes and your contributions on why you have this peaceful society. And so I really like that, but find it interesting because had, and who knows, but had they not have had an Ardra contract made up in the beginning, would they have changed it? So someone 1,000 years ago came to inspire them, but from then it was all their contributions. Who do you think that person was?
A very smart person, because it cascaded into other things and change began and whatnot. I mean, I don't want to go into, I was just about to just jump into religion, but I don't want to do that.
religious beliefs can have an impact on people's actions. And yeah. I think because there's this, I mean, and they don't really establish in the episode, like, you know, was it a person who was like, I think I'll see what I can do to make this a better society by making the people believe this, or if they really did have some sort of like revelation or something from some sort of deity or something to inspire them to pass that along. They kind of leave that open, which I like, but somebody transmitted that message.
Well, I mean, doesn't that kind of like open it up to basically a religion? I mean, they base the contract around their laws, and then of course things of course evolve. And I say this to a lot of people, and I always say is like, whoever thought up the Bible and all that kind of stuff, if let's just say it's a hoax, let's just say for argument's sake that it is a hoax, because I'm not saying that at all, but like, let's just say it's a hoax, and whoever that person that made up the Bible and let's say the Quran and all that kind of stuff is a genius, because look what it's done to the world. I mean, it gave a morale compass to those that are that were, I don't know, maybe if you want to call it savagery or something like that, or savage at that time, right? And they were just in tribal villages and all that kind of stuff. But like, I mean, and then spread of it throughout the world to be kind to each other and whatnot. That's genius. Now, I'm not saying anything about religion being a hoax, because I actually do believe in God and all that. But I'm just saying, that's just one of those things that I talk to. All right, a subject I bring about when someone wants to talk religion is like, well, maybe it's all fake or something like that. What do you think about that? And usually it generates quite a bit.
Quite a bit of discussion, I'm sure. I'm sure we might get some comments on
negative,
this.
But yeah.
Well, I mean, so like the interesting thing about Star Trek is you can take a look at it on a case-by-case basis for these different worlds and see like, what is the real basis for this? And I mean, you have different examples like here. It seems like it's clear that somebody did that in order to organize things for society, and she's a con woman and all of that. But then you have other examples like Deep Space Nine, where they kind of leave it up to how you feel about it, whether this is really a, you know, group of deities or not, that kind of thing. So, I mean, it can generate some interesting discussion. And I think that, you know, religion can lead to good actions or bad actions, like any, you know, code of behavior or anything that people say, it can be good or bad. For these people, somehow over the course of 1,000 years, it's been like this really good thing that's almost led them to like this utopian society, like right. The Federation, but in a different way, which is kind of an interesting contrast.
Yeah.
I had a couple other things I wanted to say about it. So, I mean, first of all, I think we should acknowledge that this episode, even though it's season 4 of The Next Generation, it actually has its basis in the Star Trek TV show that was supposed to happen in the 70s that we now call Phase 2, where there was like a similar story. But I think it's interesting they took that story that was from all those years before and adapted it for The Next Generation. And also, like at the end of this episode, there's got to be a big change in their society, right? Like it's been organized around this kind of prophecy and things that might happen in the future. And now they found that there was somebody who was conning them and nobody was really coming back to do that. Like, what kind of effect does that have on the society? And it makes me think of justice as well. Like, you know, they've intervened in their society and what they believe, and what kind of impact is that going to have? I've got to think it's going to have a huge impact, even if they knew they did these things themselves. Like, what is their future to look forward to or to organize things around, right?
Well, yeah, and that's what I found interesting was that, you know, whoever came in and inspired them to change, they made this contract that in 1,000 years, I'm going to take over. Like, whoever inspired them did not have, you know, good intentions, because otherwise they wouldn't have, you know, laid down this contract with this society. So, and same with the Edo, you know, on justice, because the Edo's out there watching over them, making sure that there's, you know, that's their little followers. And so it makes me question the reason as to why these beings would take possession or control.
I don't know.
The beings in justice? I mean,
well, both of them. So whoever inspired the, you know, the Ventaxians, like, they made a contract.
It could have just been a regular Ventaxian who said, there's this contract that's been made with Ardra, and they don't have any real, and you're taking it on faith that there was this Ardra who visited and we made a contract and here it is. They don't really say exactly how it happened.
So, but then even whoever made that, like, is saying there's a contract that in 1,000 years, you're going to lose all of your freedoms and stuff like that.
That's the ultimate of, like, pushing off the consequences, right? Like, I'm going to be long dead in 1,000 years.
Motivation, right?
They were thinking that by then they'll overthrow Ardra when she comes back and they'll be more powerful than her. I don't know. Hmm. That was also my other thought.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously the Edo, you couldn't, I mean, that's something physical in the sky.
Right.
You can't really go against that. I mean, that's probably the ultimate sign of true power, that you're always in the sky and you can do stuff on a fly, and, you know, you can't really disprove that. Whereas Ardra, you probably could. But, like, yeah, I don't know. Because it was 1,000 years. All right, so I guess we'll move on. We're going to go to one of Amy's favorites, the Drumhead. Amy?
Yes, very excited. Love this episode. Good courtroom through the whole thing. So it says, an overzealous Starfleet admiral begins a witch hunt aboard the Enterprise, determined to find a conspiracy and eventually accuse Captain Picard of treason. Admiral Satie, shame on you.
Da, da, da. Mm-hmm. And this is the episode that we loved her wardrobe and everything. Or no, we talked about her wardrobe a long time ago. About her elaborate uniforms and everything for being an admiral. Oh.
Are there costume choices you like in each of these episodes?
Well, the next one, no, but yeah.
Aw.
So I like this episode, and basically almost the entire thing is this courtroom and this inquisition, I guess you would call it, because they're trying to gather evidence to try and figure out if there's a conspiracy, and they find the Klingon and his DNA is in this hypospray and that's sending communications and stuff. But that's not the end of it. So even when they figure out that there was no collusion for the warp drive to explode or whatever, that was just wear and tear, right? Some cracks, I think they said.
Yeah, it was a defect. It was an accident.
Yeah.
But Satie uses that as an excuse because there might be something going on somewhere.
Right. Yeah. And so it's like, if you want to find a conspiracy, you will find a conspiracy one way or the other, right? That's sort of the general gist of this episode.
And poor crewman Tarsus. Poor guy. Aww. To get interrogated like that because of his ears.
Yeah, yes. Richard is wearing some ears. And I think you said before recording that those are your Romulan ears, but you're
a Vulcan. They're Vulcan.
Okay.
They're definitely Vulcan. Okay. Yeah. We don't talk about Black Ops like that. I'm just kidding. But yeah, I am wearing the Novos friggin' Vulcan ears, and they're actually not bad, actually.
So I was able to watch this episode with my brother, and you know, we watched it, and this is when I was up in Utah, and he's a big Star Trek fan. And so at the end, he asked me this question, and he was like, and I want to ask it to you. Do you think Admiral Satie, like, her purpose was to take down Picard?
You mean why she was sent there for this?
I will leave the question open to your interpretation.
I don't think that that's her purpose. I think what happens is they're really concerned about, I guess, this incident with the warp drive, because it shouldn't happen. And it seems like maybe there's some sabotage. So she's sent to investigate. The investigation starts. And as, you know, they apprehend the Klingon, that's done. There's the accident here. She kind of moves on, and she moves to Tarsus, and then from there to Picard. I think she's kind of improvising what she's doing. And I think there's an implication in the episode that she's kind of mentally unstable at this point and has become paranoid. And so she's kind of using her authority to navigate around where she feels she can find, you know, the biggest problem or the biggest charges to level. And what bigger thing to do than to accuse Picard of something as she's going through her investigation? But I don't think she starts out that way. And in fact, toward the beginning of the episode, she's very pleasant to Picard, and very much like, let's work together, let's see what's going on. So I don't think she has anything against him, but over time she does, because she's going through this investigation, getting more and more paranoid, and eventually hits on all of these things that Picard has done to break the Prime Directive, and things that she thinks are questionable. And in her mind, then he becomes a big enemy.
I think that this could very well turn into, maybe they had an idea or something like that, but I think that this could have turned into something like later on down the road in this, in the season or in the series, that she might have had some kind of resentment towards Picard, because that's what it ultimately feels like, that when she, straight from the get-go, that she was after him in the very first place, and she just needed an excuse to go after him. It just seems like it's overkill to bring an admiral. She wasn't in retirement, was she?
She's retired, yeah.
Yeah, they pulled her out of retirement.
Yeah, they pulled her out of retirement. So it's a little bit overkill to bring a retired judge.
That is a little mysterious.
Right, exactly. So that's why I'm thinking, like, maybe she had some favors. She was like, I heard about this case.
Right.
I really want to go after Picard. And it very well could have turned into something like a conspiracy later on down the road. Whether or not that was their intentions or not, or if they were thinking like that, that would be very interesting to me to tie in this episode with it. I'm not saying that this episode has no meaning, but yeah, like, I think the way it was built, it felt like that's exactly what was going to happen. Is that something like they're going to do like an origin story of her, why she has so much resentment towards him. So.
Well, it's interesting you bring up that conspiracy, because I sort of was feeling that notion as I was watching it, because like in Conspiracy, when Picard asked Data to look at all the previous orders coming from Starfleet and, you know, just looking at this massive list of commands and then recognizing patterns from it, it's sort of what she did with Picard and just said, I'm looking at the entire expanse of your career decisions and these decisions, you've broken the Prime Directive. And so looking at this mass, it sort of brought it back to Conspiracy, where it's like, yeah, you're going to find something and there may be excuses for it, but what's the pattern overall? I thought was an interesting twist that she did against Picard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, even though Picard says that all of the explanations for the violations of the Prime Directive are on file, and it seems like Command's accepted that, she's just going to keep pushing it. I hadn't really thought about what her real purpose might be. I thought that she had just gotten paranoid at some point and is just kind of rooting around for somebody important to take down. I've taken down bigger men than you, Picard.
Yeah.
You know, that's like what she's looking for. Maybe have some sort of recapturing of glory of other people she's taken down. Who knows who that's been or why, you know? Of course, I think we have to mention Simon Tarsis in this episode, right? Played by Spencer Garrett.
Yes, we do.
We interviewed previously.
We did, from Star Trek Las Vegas. He's so awesome.
One of Amy's favorites, I think I'd say, yeah.
Yes, definite favorite. He just was so nice and kind to us the whole convention and gave us a great interview. And so, yes.
Yeah, and I think he does a great job in this and points up another thing besides the paranoia, which is that the reason that he kind of gets in trouble is because he lied on his application. He didn't say that he was part Romulan, I guess because there's a prejudice against Romulans in Starfleet, even at this point, or someone that's part Romulan. And I think it points up something really important, which is that sometimes there can be someone who's considered an enemy, and people might suspect someone, as Picard says, shares the blood of a current enemy just because of that and not because of anything else. And for Sati, it's enough that he had this lie on the application to think he must be involved in this conspiracy. He must be working for the Romulans or in some way a traitor. And I think it's a really important message not to judge people just because of, you know, their heritage or beliefs.
Yeah, for something that they cannot change.
Or exactly. How they look.
Or how they look. Richard Keith's pointing to his ears. I thought you said they're Vulcan ears.
They are.
They are. But what did you put on your application, Mr. Tarsus? But no, I mean, that putting that character into it in the midst of this paranoia and this witch hunt it's really interesting. And it's an excellent episode. I think it's one of the best of the episodes. I mean, I think pretty much all the episodes we're looking at are really good, but I think this is one of the best and most important.
You know how I don't like ranking things, but this is
I know
very
how you don't
good.
Like ranking things, but I can't help it. I mean, it's more to encourage people, like listeners, if you haven't seen The Drumhead in a while, you should see it, because
yes.
If anything, it's just as relevant, if not more, than it was, 25 years
absolutely.
Ago.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. So on to the next one, and we're going off of the first duty. Okay, so following an accident during an academy training exercise that leads to the death of Wesley Crusher. Oh, sorry.
Oh.
I'm sorry. That's my fanfic. I'm sorry.
That was bad.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, so following an accident during an academy training exercise that leads to the death of one of his friends, Wesley Crusher must decide whether loyalty or truth is the first duty.
Yeah.
You there? Yeah, you all kind right. of hinted at Picard's quote in your summary. Nice job.
There you go. So, yeah.
I really like this episode. And if I get why some people don't like Wesley, but this episode, he shines. I think this is a great episode for Wesley Crusher. And you can't hate him in this episode. He does so good, and it's a good story, and he's written well. He's complex, but we're here to talk about the courtroom drama of it all.
Oh, man, we weren't gonna bash on Will Wheaton.
No, we are not.
Come on, Richard, I think he does a really good job in this episode, and Wesley is very interesting, like what he has to deal with and struggle with, don't you think?
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. Okay. No, I'm just giving crap.
I know.
I'm just giving crap. That's all.
I got you a Worf mug. Maybe I should have gotten you a Wesley mug. Well, listeners might not know.
You might have got it returned in pieces. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, listeners might not know. I sent some mugs as Christmas presents. Worf for Richard and Troy for Amy. So, but if I really wanted to make you guys angry, I would have gotten Wesley for Richard. For Richard and Roe for Amy.
I was just about to say that.
Who could you get me that I don't like? Okay, you had to bring Roe up.
let's bring it up another notch. Let's just put a picture of them kissing.
Oh, no, that's bad.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to the first duty. Sorry for the tangent. No, I think this is really good. And I think there's a couple of things. Like, I think this is the first time that we actually see Starfleet Academy. Is that right? I think it might be the case. I might be wrong, but
yeah, you might be right. Yeah, you might be
but
right.
We see Starfleet Academy, and we see this inquiry, like this Starfleet inquiry that happens at the Academy, and it's really interesting with the testimony that's provided and the evidence that they have and the investigation that goes on. I think, this is one, compared to, let's say, what happens in The Devil's Due, which is, that's an alien justice system, and there's this bizarre contract that they're disputing over. In this one, it's more standard, like, someone's died, we need to have an inquiry, and let's see what we find out. But of course, the really interesting thing is, you know, Wesley's struggle with the truth versus, you know, his duty and loyalty to his friends. So I really like that struggle that he has in this episode. But like the drama itself is interesting because I think the first time you see it, you aren't quite sure where it's going or what happened, or at least I wasn't.
Yeah, and I love that twist because Rear Admiral Brand, like at the beginning, she's just going off the evidence they have, and they only have it, you know, the first 3 minutes or whatever, and then it cuts out. So everything else is taken on the word of the cadets. And I love that point where Beverly is talking to Wesley saying, well, then they got the additional footage where, oh, that was a brilliant scene where Admiral Brand just catches him in a lie. Well,
like, oh, really? Let me show you this footage.
Yes. Is this the formation? You know, and just, I just felt so much for Wesley, and he's caught in a lie. And still with that evidence, Beverly comes in and is like, well, there must be something wrong with the transmission. So we're going to figure that out because you're not lying. Like, that's the pivotal point for the scene.
Yeah. And you know, one thing I noticed this time around is the contrast between what you see here with Wesley, where he is caught in a lie and he's pressured to tell a lie in front of, you know, an admiral and a captain, an official inquiry, versus what you see in Justice 4 years before when the Edo are questioning and he says, we're Starfleet, we don't lie.
Oh, yeah.
And here he is now in officially like in Starfleet and he's lying. So what happens to change between that point, what, like early on in the series when he was really young and idealistic, and now when he's hitting the realities of what it's like actually, you know, being in the academy and what might happen in Starfleet, something very different happens. So I think that's interesting how that changes. And I think that also, you know, affects what you see later on in Journey's End, where Wesley's not happy and wants to get out of Starfleet. So this is kind of like, I think that midway point where he's really has to start to question where things have taken him and if this is the right path for him. But that struck me a lot this time. Like, he said, we don't lie, because, you know, I just watched that recently for what we were doing and I hadn't thought about it before.
Because we're Starfleet.
We're Starfleet.
And
we don't
lie. I don't like Will Wheaton. I'm sorry, Wesley Crusher.
No, season one Wesley Crusher. I mean, this is different though. This is a different.
It is
Crusher.
Different. Yeah, you definitely see that he's far more experienced this time around. And like I said, you know, he's doing is that he's showing loyalty to his Nova Squadron team, and I mean, yes, I know it's a Wesley episode, and I can't stand Wesley, but this is a good episode in general. I don't know. When I was watching this last time, I think this was a couple days ago, it's like, it bothers me every time I see a courtroom drama, because, my degree's in it, and I'm like,
how's it different from what you would expect?
Well, so in a normal court, so this format is basically an inquiry, court-martial inquiry before actual charges get filed and all that kind of stuff. They're trying to figure out what's going on and everything. They would not be talking to each other.
Oh, they'd be secluded?
They'd be quarantined.
Okay.
Yeah, they would be quarantined. And that's what bothers me.
Unless they're more trusting a couple hundred years from now.
even today.
Now, when you say they'd be quarantined, you mean that like in this case, the cadets would not be able to interact with each other like they do in the episode. Yeah,
right. Exactly. And it's the same thing with courtroom procedures today. I mean, it's the same thing too. You wouldn't be talking to the witness if you were the person that's.
Right, and if two people are accused, you probably don't keep them in the same jail cell to talk to each other, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's the prisoner's dilemma.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, I know drama, it happens, and it generates a really good show, and it did. But for the most part, I mean, this is a really growing push off point for Wesley to be that, or to get nipped in the butt for a lie that, in a sense, killed someone. And he could have really paid the ultimate price, like Lucerno did. And well,
but it's not the lie that killed the person. It's participating in it in the first place. And
well, but he's still lying.
No, he's still lying. But what gets the person killed is that they all agree to participate in this. They need the five people to do it, right?
Yeah.
So if they hadn't had Wesley participate, maybe they couldn't do it. So it's actually partly his participation that is responsible for this kind of thing happening, right?
Right.
Well, and also the idea Nova Squadron being best of the best and putting on a good show and the culture and the pressure of expectations, whether they put them on themselves or the students and, you know, the graduation ceremony, that they wanted to do something above and beyond, you know, like that external pressures, and not saying that you give into them like that, but that definitely has a play into it as well and should be looked at, you know, because it was going on back when Picard was at Academy. Because when Boothby says, well, remember this experience? And it's like, oh yeah, well, that's nothing compared to what people think of the Nova Squadron. So there's definitely a lot of pressures going on in this episode, and where does the blame go?
Yeah, and it's probably tough in this situation where you have pressure from these people that you've gone to the academy with, and you want to fit in and be loyal to them and have a great ceremony, graduation ceremony in this case. And you're thinking like, yeah, we can all handle it. It's no problem, right? So, but I think it also makes you think like, okay, if I was in that situation, what would I do, right? I mean, for myself personally, I know exactly what I would do, and it would mean we wouldn't have an episode. I just wouldn't participate in the thing in the first place, but that's just me. I couldn't see participating in something that dangerous.
But that's 40-year-old Justin. Go back to, you know, 18-year-old Justin.
I'm not 40 just yet, but I'm close.
Well, you know what I mean.
There's definitely truth there where when you're younger, maybe you'd be willing to do something a little more dangerous.
You are. And I think more susceptible to peer pressure. I mean, I'm not saying that you would. I'm just saying that, you know, you can't, it's not proper to say, well, I wouldn't do that, but you have the experience of, you know, living a few more years than young Wesley, who's been sheltered on a starship, you know, does not have the major peer pressures of teens around. You know, he's used to dealing with adults. And so being thrown into Starfleet with tons of peers and that pressure, I think it is a little, you know, explainable as to why he went along.
Yeah. But somehow it's been banned for like 100 years and nobody else has tried it. That's interesting.
I doubt that, but yeah.
Yeah.
But I love the reference to Jaeger.
The Jaeger loop.
The Jaeger loop. I love that.
Yeah, that is a nice reference. Yeah.
You guys know who Jaeger is, right? Chuck Jaeger?
Yeah, was he the first guy to break the sound barrier?
Yep.
Okay, yeah.
Yes, sir.
So yeah, definitely a reference to him. So that, yeah, that's cool. When they talk about this loop, I don't think you've heard of before, and then they show how it worked. I like that too. They actually had these graphics like, here's the formation, and then they go up like this and around, and the graphic that they have for the when they do this starburst, it looks really cool. It's like,
yeah.
Anyway,
I had a question actually about that now that you bring it up. So thank you. So at the very beginning in deposition where they're talking to Nick Locarno, Admiral Brand is, you know, interrogating him and questioning him. And so he has this simulation that's, well, this is what we were doing. And it shows this whole computer simulation. Like that right there is a lie, right? What that simulation was doctored. Am I correct?
Well, no. I mean, I think that's what they were intending to do. So they're already
no.
Probably
they never
would have been
were
a simulation.
Intending to do what Nick Locarno was saying.
But they filed a flight plan saying that's what they were going to do.
Right. So they would have already had that simulation was doctored to say they were going to do this, even though they knew they were going to do something different.
Well, yeah. I mean, they were lying by saying we have this flight plan and here's a simulation for how it will look, but. I mean, I think everybody expected that's what they were going to do.
Well, not on the Squadron, but everyone else.
Well, no, everyone else, right. But yeah. But, yeah.
Okay,
but
I don't think so they then had a doctorate that was after the plan that they submitted. Mm-hmm. And so he was just giving that as evidence.
I think
that's definitely, you know, the beginning of the lie right
there. Sure,
yeah.
The end of Nova Squadron and the beginning of Red Squad.
Red Squad! Oh, that's Deep Space Nine, isn't it? Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, that's why maybe I don't know what you're talking about.
There's another squad of cadets who think they're the elite in Deep Space Nine.
Yeah. That's basically what this was. Yeah. Nova Squadron was basically the elite of the elite.
Now, like, I guess one last thing on this one. So, I mean, this happens because someone dies, right?
Right.
And like, I'm trying to think back to the other ones that we've talked about. If there was ever anything like that at stake where someone had died and there was an inquiry. Oh, actually, Matter of Perspective. Riker's on trial for murder.
Yeah.
But for a lot of these, it isn't because someone's died. It's because like there's a challenge or they're looking into something or, you know, Wesley's accused of stepping on some plants, you know, stuff like that. But I think it's one of the rare ones in the Next Generation where it's happening with some real consequences. Someone died.
Well, so moving on to the season, our series finale is All Good Things. Really, it's not really All Good Things, but it is the end of it.
So, not that All Good Things needs an introduction, but in case you forgot, Picard learns from Q that he's to be the cause of annihilation of humanity and begins an incredible journey through time from the present to the past, where he first took command of an Enterprise to 25 years into the future. So this one, you know, is the bookend with Encounter at Farpoint, which we talked about last time. So what do you think about this trial compared to Encounter?
Well, you know, when you included this on the list, Amy, at first I was a little bit puzzled. I mean, I guess it is the conclusion of the trial that kind of started an Encounter at Farpoint, but there's not like specifically a proceeding that's going on, right?
Well, there is. What do you mean? Yeah, when Picard gets, and we've got Q in his judge gown and hat and everything. Did you?
Well, no, I rewatched it, but because it's taken a while to get to this episode, it's been a little bit. Oh, yeah, he does take him back there, but.
Yeah, so he goes back.
But it's just him and Q in the room, right? Back in that courtroom.
But it's still, he's acting as judge. And that's why, when, you know, Picard is like so surprised. He's like, humanity's already proven that we're peaceful. Why are we here again? You know, it's like he thought that it was done. But then, you know, Q's coming out and he's like, I will allow you 10 questions. And so to me, that's the courtroom, because humanity is still being judged and has been judged that you are inferior. And so we have decided to remove you and annihilate you.
I mean, I guess it's the same setting, but it's really unusual though, because there's no spectators, there's nobody else that's there, and Picard is kind of like asking these questions to figure out what's going on. But yeah, I mean, I guess it is the bookend to that proceeding.
Yeah, because that's where judgment is taking place. It's like you're going to be annihilated. And you're the cause of it. You will do it. You have done it. You are doing it, you know?
And thank goodness he passes the test.
Again.
Otherwise, that'd be a boring. And DS9, Voyager.
Humanity's annihilated. And sorry, no more Star Trek. At least going forward from that point in time.
Or there's a mirror universe that there is no more Star Trek after this point.
That would have been weird if they decided to just, yeah. We'll just annihilate humanity. Sorry, the movie's canceled.
Sorry, no Nemesis, Amy.
Aww. Richard, do you think this is a courtroom?
I think so. Yeah, well.
Good, really, because that's the right answer.
I mean, it is, but a lot of the focus of the episode is Picard, you know, figuring out this puzzle of what he needs to do.
Yeah, and there's been Yeah, not every episode that we've talked about is like the Drumhead, where the entire thing is the entire thing is a courtroom. There is an element of courtroom drama here, and in my opinion, just totally, yeah, bookends with Encounter at Farpoint, where we have the first, and now we have we find out that the trial never ended. The Q has never stopped judging you.
I mean, that's why it's such a great ending, because it ties in the very first episode.
Yeah. Although, interestingly, like, I think Picard asks if mankind's being put on trial again, and Q says no. I guess that's because it's continuing, but
right.
Yeah, I always love watching this episode, but it was one of the ones where, I don't know, I think of it as, maybe it's like the framework of it, but it's not as much a part of the episode, but it is interesting to think of it in that way. But it's definitely a bookmark to what happens in Encounter at Farpoint.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Bookend.
Sorry, Amy, I'm just like, I was struggling with it a little bit.
Well, and I think, you know, when Picard, you know, is talking to Q, and it's like, Picard recognizes who Q is. He's just another being. And it's like, it's not for you to judge, you know, stop judging us. Oh, but it is, you know, we're going to end your trek through the stars. I love that line. You know,
you have to wait a few years to talk about the Star Trek.
Yes.
But trek through the stars. I like that.
You know, and so here Q is this race that's, you know, putting his race as judge, jury, and executioner. And it's like, yep, humanity's going to be destroyed. We're going to make room for, you know, smarter, more intelligent race. So, you know, I just think as Richard's
pointing to himself, you, okay.
Yeah, so I think that the idea of courtroom is still very, very evident in this episode. Just because we're not sitting in a specific courtroom. Okay. It's the idea.
No, it's very interesting, because I hadn't, before this, I hadn't really thought of it as much in that way. When I think of, because I think of it more, there's these three different time periods. Picard has to figure out this puzzle and Q's messing with him. That's kind of how I think about
basically,
it.
Yeah.
Like, whereas in Encounter at Farpoint, it's clear that, you know, Q is putting him on trial throughout the episode to see where what he's doing.
Well, Picard's like, well, I hope this is the last time that we are on trial. And Q's like, the trial never ends. And I just,
the trial never ends. But yep. At this point, Q is going to move off to bother Janeway instead.
Auntie Kathy.
we've talked about this. I think, Richard, we talked about this in the fifth TNG movie one a while back, but boy, it would have been great to have Q in a movie. I would have loved that.
Yeah.
But it never happened.
That definitely, it was him all along that was basically pulling the strings like Amy was doing just a second ago.
You know, it's interesting. We don't get any kind of courtroom or legal drama in the movies, right? So it's just not a setting in the TNG movies, I should say.
Right.
There are elements of that in TOS and Kelvin Timeline movies.
Yeah,
but
the reboot
not
ones.
Not TNG, really, that no? I can think right. of, which is interesting, because we've had something in almost every season, except for season 6, there's been some kind of courtroom or legal drama or some kind of connection. But in the movies, nothing. So.
Yeah, it really should have happened with Insurrection. You know, because there's that admiral, you know, that takes over the Baku and stuff. But
you mean the movie that doesn't exist?
Yes, that one.
Okay.
You know, they could have actually had something in First Contact with like an inquiry about, you know, basically losing the Enterprise D, which does happen in one of the books. But that would have been interesting if that was a part of First Contact to kind of bridge things from generations. But yeah, for whatever reason, they decided not to. Again, even though there are courtroom proceedings in TOS movies and Kelvin Timeline movies, there's nothing in the TNG movies.
Yeah.
Well, Troy, you know, did crash the ship, you know. She just...
No courtroom needed for that. She's completely innocent. Following orders. Okay.
Yes. She was saving everybody's...
Crashed in Nemesis too.
She was saving everybody's lives.
Exactly. Even spots.
Oh, so it's okay. Yeah. Oh, okay.
And Picard told her to crash the ship in Nemesis, okay?
Oh. Yeah, both times.
So.
I got it.
Sorry, it's always going to be awesome. Two against one when we talk about Troy here.
Yeah, I bring it.
So, plaintiff, that would be you, Justin. Your closing argument, sir.
Well, I think that this was a really great thing that we've done, looking at all of these, you know, courtroom dramas and legal proceedings. We're seeing things that are taking place on alien planets. We're seeing Q's version of justice. You know, we're also seeing more official things for Starfleet JAG proceedings and Starfleet Academy proceedings. So I think there's a really great variety of these kind of courtroom and legal dramas. And I think, and even, you know, seeing how things work in a hearing in the Klingon High Council. So there's a lot of variety. And we got to talk about a lot of, you know, important issues and the consequences that happen to different societies. So I think it was a really great examination. And I think, you know, all of these episodes, you know, are either really good or have really good elements to them. So I've enjoyed this, you know, a lot over the two parts.
Awesome. And the defendant side, Amy?
Yeah, Justin really summarized it as he was talking. I'm like, oh, I was going to say that. But yeah, we get to see, yeah, the Klingons and, you know, all we get to see what it supposedly looks like on Alien as well as within Starfleet. And so we get that rounded idea of what really is justice and, you know, how do others view it? And then by looking at it through Starfleet, we can analyze and look at it within our lives. And what is it that we are judging? What is it that, you know, our justice system does? Is it fair? Is it legal? You know, is that the same, one and the same, or is it different? You know, is it moral? I think we have a lot of laws on the book that are, you know, obviously for society, but have their roots in morality. And so to look at that and to have things change over time, like say over 1,000 years or whatever, it's just interesting to see how Starfleet and Star Trek deals with that idea of justice and laws and stuff. So it's been, I've really, really enjoyed it. And yes, All Good Things is a courtroom drama.
What do you think, Richard?
Well, I had a lot of fun doing this. This is especially when I'm going to be determining your guys' fate in a minute.
Oh, I forgot about that.
But like, yeah, definitely looking through all these episodes, it definitely puts a different perspective on just basically, you know, looking through the lens of through your criminal justice system and how it could ultimately be different. And you know, I mean, like I said. I do love courtroom dramas in general. Some of them I can't even stand to watch, but most of them I do. But like, yeah, it's a great way to look at it on where their moral compass is, based on the race, and you could also tell them what their where they stand. So definitely within their laws. So
yeah.
Great choice. Thank you, Standard Orbit, and thank you, Rebecca, for reply. For suggesting this, and you guys need to stand for your judgment. You ready?
All rise.
On your feet, criminals. So, with this gracious court, I'm going to have to, unfortunately, recite the rule of 2036. The new United Nations declare that no Earth citizen could be made to answer for the crimes of a race, or the forebears, or a podcast.
Yay!
Because this is a court of 2070, not 2079.
Nice.
So I find these two hosts reluctantly not guilty.
All right.
Party and 10 forward.
I was hoping to swing the axe. No, I'm just kidding.
For a second, I thought you were going to cite Kill All the Lawyers and say, these two must be executed.
No, I'm not that mean.
Then he wouldn't have anyone to podcast with.
That's right. It would be a very boring show, and I doubt that anybody would want to hear me laughing all the time.
Oh. Richard.
Well, it's been so much fun determining these counselors' fates, but this isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on the network. Here's what you might have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Earl Grey.
Exactly. I mean, like, Arsenal of Freedom, like, there's plot A, plot B, and plot C, if you look at it. I mean, this episode really has a lot going, because when I think of Arsenal of Freordom, I don't think of it as a Geordi episode, but yet we've just mentioned two really important moments with Geordi and him taking command and, you know, building his character. So it's a great episode.
Stage 9, a podcast about the people who make Star Trek.
I mean, it's, you know, there's a scene with a bear and Leonardo DiCaprio and, you know, whatever.
As I understand it, it's not a pleasant scene. They're not high-fiving each other.
It's pretty intense, you know. I wouldn't say it's unbearable, but it's pretty intense. Waka waka. Anyway.
The 602 Club.
For me, first of all, only being the second Star Wars book I've ever read, I like the difference of having a series of short stories and not just one novel by one author like the Claudia Gray book that I read, Leia, Princess of Alderaan.
The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
Okay, so I'm reading this really great book that I recommend. It's The Ultimate Star Trek and Philosophy, The Search for Socrates. It's a collection of stories from all different authors, and it's been on my bookshelf for a year.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all of these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. Now, if you're an Apple user, as you should be, right, Richard?
Yes, ma'am, you should.
Be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and written review.
If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, in most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up.
If you'd like to send us an email, and we love getting your emails, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select Earl Grey. That will come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. So, Justin, where can people contact you?
Well, you can find me on Twitter. I'm at TrekFan4747, where I tweet about nothing but Star Trek. And I'm continuing my season 4 rewatch of TNG right now. And you can also find me hanging around the Babel Conference on Facebook. Richard, where can people find you?
They can find me sharpening my axe for my next hearing. I'm on Facebook. I'm also on Facebook. I pop in here and there in the Babel Conference. And if you guys want to follow me on Twitter, I'm not really active at the moment because I'm busy with my dog. But training my dog, nothing else.
Why don't you tweet about that?
What's that? Oh, yeah, I guess I could. Yeah, I guess I could. But you can also follow me on Twitter, and my handle is xransom. Amy, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me here on the network. I'm a co-host of The Edge and hosting Postcards from the Edge, which is, as we talked about, going to be starting up now that we've got the second half of the first season coming on. So you can find us there. You can find me on Twitter at Miss Amy Nelson. But my favorite place is on the Babel Conference along with everyone else. Now, if you'd like to help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all of the details. We got some fun perks for you, like early access to our episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more available through our special patrons website, Patron Zone. It does require a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support at any level that you can give us and hope that you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. At this time, we'd like to recognize our current associate producers with all the love for the new year. And it goes to Norman Lau, Justin Ozer, and Michael Huter. Thank you so much for supporting Trek FM and Earl Grey.
So join us next time for another cup of Earl Grey.
The advocate will refrain from making her opponent disappear.
Great joy and gratitude.
Reverse the decision. Death to the hosts!